Good to see everyone this morning. Very happy to have you with us. Appreciate those who have led us in our worship service up to this point. And it's good to see Mike Maravilla back with us. Mike, we have missed you, and we've been praying for you, and very glad that you are back with us safe and sound. And I know that you're happy about that, and your family is too. I want to direct your attention this morning as we begin our thoughts to this passage in the book of 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 26. The Apostle Paul says, "For consider your calling, brethren, that there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised, God has chosen the things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God." The major problem that the Apostle Paul was dealing with as he wrote the opening chapters to the Corinthians in this letter is the fact that they were viewing the gospel of Jesus Christ as if it were in the same category as human wisdom. And human wisdom was something that was appealing to those of the Greco-Roman world. And so they were viewing, these Christians at Corinth, were viewing the gospel of Jesus as something that they could just categorize in that same way. And it was causing them, in large part, to begin to identify themselves with various Christian teachers that had introduced certain ones in that congregation to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And just like in the Greek philosophical world, you might have different teachers and different slants of philosophy. So they were beginning to divide themselves up in the Corinthian church in that same way. And the Apostle Paul corrects them in that in the opening chapters of his letter. And he points out that the ironic thing about their mistaken thought that the gospel is comparable to human wisdom is the ironic thing that the gospel of Jesus Christ is something that human beings, in their wisdom, largely think is foolish. In fact, the apostle makes the observation that God purposely chose foolish things of the world, that is, that people in this life would consider to be foolish. God chose those things to use in his plan through Jesus Christ. The fact of the matter is, there are so many things in the gospel of Jesus that men and women in our world just don't esteem very highly at all. And God knew that. And God chose those things of low esteem, those things that were base, those things that were weak, those things that were folly, as far as the world would value them. God purposely chose those things as a way of differentiating who those people of an honest and sincere and dedicated heart would really be, and who would be those people who really are not of that mindset. And I want to talk with you about that for a few minutes this morning. Because if we're going to lead a Christian life, we need to understand that the things that we're going to be doing as Christians, the things that we're going to be espousing as Christians, are things that the world so very often is really going to regard as just kind of foolish. That point was brought home to me very forcefully several years ago. I had a preacher friend of mine call me on the phone and ask me if I could fill in for him in conducting a worship service at a retirement home in Temple Terrace. And my understanding was, as it turned out later, my misunderstanding, but my understanding was that this was something that he had been doing on a regular basis, this retirement village there in Temple Terrace, and every Sunday afternoon, he would go over there and he would preach for them and help conduct a worship service for those retirees there. And I said, "I'd be happy to fill in for you." And so I went there that Sunday afternoon, and they had a lounge area where the people at the retirement home, people running that, they showed me to that room and they said, this is where we bring everyone for the worship service. And I looked over at one wall and there was a piano over there. And for the first time, the thought went through my mind, well, I know this preacher. Surely they don't use the piano for the worship service. Oh, no, that's just here because that's part of the recreation room facilities. And okay, because he's been doing this for a long time. Well, come to find out later, when I talk with him on the phone about all of this I'm about to tell you, he informed me that, oh, no, he had never been there before. He had been asked to do that, and it was going to be his first time to go there and to handle all that, and he couldn't come, and so he had no idea what they normally did in that thing. Well, I thought, oh, I did not realize that was the case. So I got there, and it was about time for the people to start coming in, and so these elderly folks began to come in, and some were in wheelchairs, and some were in walkers, and some had canes, and so they came in, and they all had a seat there, and then there was a woman who apparently was working there at the nursing home, and she began to talk with me, and I introduced myself to her, and I'm Brother Pickup. Oh, you're going to conduct a worship? Oh, yes, well, great. So glad that you're here and all this, you know. And she began to inform me that they always like the visiting preacher to lead the song service. And I said, well, I didn't know I was going to do that, but I'd be happy to do that for you. And so she said, well, you just lead about three or four songs here from the rostrum, and then you can give your lesson after that. And as soon as you're ready for the song service to start, you just let Sister Betty over there know. And my eyes went over there to the wall over there, and sure enough, there was Sister Betty. And she's at the piano, and she's like this. And the lady who was talking with me sat down. Everybody's looking at me. And here I am standing out there at the pulpit, and they're expecting me to lead everybody in instrumental music as we conduct our worship service to the Lord. And so I'm going through in my mind, oh my goodness, what have I got myself into? I don't understand. This all has happened, you know. And, you know, thought goes through your mind, you know. We're all human. Well, you know, is it really that big of a deal? Let me just go ahead and just that no one would ever even know. And then, of course, you know, thought comes to your mind, well, the Lord would know, though, wouldn't he? And the Lord has an annoying habit of being able to see through roofs. So I said, well, this is just one of those tests of faith right here, Marty. So, okay. So I said, well, folks, it's good to be here with you. And I'm Marty Pickup, and I preach for the Byrica Church of Christ. And I introduced myself to them. Very happy to be with you. And I said, but I just have to beg your pardon about something, because I've been asked to not only give a lesson, but to lead you in your song service, and I see that you use an instrument of music along with your song service, and I am in no way trying to impose my conscience on you, but I must tell you that in my conscience, I just can't participate in that, and I'll tell you why. Because I try to be a New Testament Christian, and as I look at the New Testament, it seems evident to me that first century Christians, guided by the apostles, did not use instruments of music in their worship, and purposely did not. And I, therefore, cannot in good conscience participate with you in your song service because you're using the instrument. And every now and then I glance over there at Miss Betty over there, and she was still. And I said, and I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to come in here and impose my conscience on you. I'm just going to sit over here in the chair while you conduct your song service. And then when you're done with that song service, then I'm going to get up and I will give you a lesson. But that will allow me to be true to my conscience. And yet I'm also allowing you to not have my conscience be imposed upon you. And I said, so how does that sound? And they were just all. And there was Miss Betty over there. And then she got this really strange look on her face, a look of irritation. And I went over and sat down, and she realized, She starts playing, they start singing Amazing Grace, and just, you know. And I sat over there, and they got done, and Miss Betty just led the whole song service from the piano, you know, and everything. And they sang about three or four songs that way, and so finally Miss Betty, you know, with kind of a look of irritation on her face, she looked over at me, and I could tell, okay, she's done now, and they're done with the song service. So I got up, and I gave the lesson that I had prepared. And I didn't know how they were going to take all that. So I stand there at the doorway, and they're all leaving that recreation room. And here are all these elderly people kind of filing out one by one, wheelchairs, walkers, canes. I'll never forget it. This one elderly woman came up to me, and she had a walker, and she made her way slowly. And she looked up at me, and she said, "I appreciate your lesson." And I've never heard anything about instrumental music like you were talking about. But you know what? That made a lot of sense. And I appreciate your conviction in that. Thank you. And she ambled out. And I thought, well, now Marty isn't that a lesson to you. You know, even when we think that we're in a position where things are not going to be of any value, or that somehow we're caught in a difficult spot, there's an opportunity to maybe teach the Lord's truth and make people think about some things they need to think about that they've never thought about before. Next lady came out in her walker. She said, "That was a good lesson. I appreciate it. But that thing you said about instrumental music is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of in my life." Well, you win some and you lose some. But I'll tell you what that illustrates, folks. It illustrates the fact that people are different. And people are going to view some things that first century Christians did as sensible, and the whole idea of abiding by what God had first century Christians do, that's going to make a lot of sense to a lot of people. And yet to other people, it's not going to make sense at all. And that's really what the Apostle Paul was talking about in reference to the whole gospel. And God purposely has done that. He's purposely chosen those things of the world that might appear foolish to a lot of people, but he's chosen those things, and that's a way for him to differentiate who the hearts are that really want to serve him. And I believe that that's what the Apostle Paul is getting at here. The fact of the matter is, the things of God are foolish to some people. You and I just need to accept that. Some people are not going to get it. Sometimes we think that we can intellectualize other people into at least accepting the rationality of what we believe, even if they won't accept it for themselves. At least they're going to respect us and see how reasonable we are, and sometimes we think we can at least persuade them of that. Well, sometimes maybe we can, but most of the time... What the Apostle Paul was teaching the Corinthians is that the things of God, for the most part, are foolish to people. Or at least there are certain things in every society or in every culture at some given point in time that a lot of people are just going to regard as absolutely ridiculous. And yet that's all part of the gospel plan of Jesus Christ. That's what the Apostle Paul was getting at further when he said to the Corinthians in chapter 2, beginning with verse 6, "Yet we do speak wisdom among those who are mature, a wisdom, however, not of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away." Paul doesn't want them to think, and I don't want you to think, that I'm suggesting that God's gospel is really foolish, or the things that God uses in his gospel really are folly. No, they are not. But they are only deemed wise and esteemed as being of value by those who are mature. And not everybody in the world has that spiritual kind of outlook, that spiritual kind of maturity. Paul says the wisdom of God is true wisdom, but it's a wisdom not of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away. But we speak God's wisdom in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God predestined before the ages to our glory. The wisdom which none of the rulers of this age has understood, for if they had understood it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. He goes on to say in verse 14, a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. And he cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised. But he who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised by no one. Some people of a traditional Calvinistic point of view take these verses here, verses 14 and following, to somehow talk, they say, of a person not being able to understand the gospel unless some supernatural action, really a miraculous kind of action, is performed upon that person by the Spirit of God. Human beings are inherently depraved now as a result of Adam's fall, and so we need God's Spirit to make us receptive to the gospel in some kind of a supernatural operation. That's not what Paul's talking about here at all. When he talks here about a natural man versus a spiritual man, a natural mindset versus a spiritual mindset, he's talking about the fact that there are some people who just have the kind of way of thinking about things that you see throughout human beings, throughout the world. They just look at things from a natural point of view, and they're concerned about what would make sense to them, what kind of fits common wisdom among people of the world. And Paul says those kind of people really aren't going to understand the gospel, because the gospel is something that God has purposely chosen to not make sense to people who just have a this world kind of outlook. But he says there are people who have a spiritual kind of outlook, a spiritual mindset. Those are the people who think about more than just this life. And they think more about, or more than just about what they want, or what I'm concerned about right here and now. They think about such things as, well, why am I here to begin with? And who put me here? And what's the purpose of life? And isn't there something more than just this? And surely life is about more than just this world. And those people with that spiritual kind of bent, Paul says, are the ones who are going to hear that gospel message, and they're going to get it. It's going to make sense to them. And the idea that God has come into the world in the person of His Son, Jesus, to then die upon the cross for them, and that therefore He's the Lord of their lives, that's going to be something that those spiritually minded people, it's going to make sense to them. And they're going to be not only understanding that, but they're going to be valuing that. And Paul makes the observation that the natural man, he isn't going to get it. The spiritual man will get it, even though he's not going to be appraised himself by those people of the world. Folks, we need to understand that the things of God are foolish to most people in this world. And therefore, we're going to be fools in the eyes of most people in this world. And if you think it's not going to be that way, then you don't really get it. And that's what Paul was trying to help the Corinthians to see. You're trying to treat the gospel as another philosophy out here among competing human philosophies, and people out there who have a bent toward human philosophy are one day just going to see, well, you know what? The gospel of Jesus is just the best philosophy of all, and they're going to accept it, and you Corinthians are going to introduce that to them. And Paul says, you're not getting this here. The fact of the matter is, because you're Christians, those people out there in the world who are so adhering to human philosophy are going to look at Christianity as the most ridiculous philosophy of all. And you're a fool for believing it. Paul says that's how they're going to view you. So do you see, Paul says, the folly of your treating Christianity as if it were like what the world produces? And therefore dividing yourselves up among human teachers and boasting that one group is better than another group, like humans do and their human wisdom. Paul says, do you not see the folly of all that? Folks, the things of God are foolish to a lot of people. Let me list with you some foolish things. That is, as the world would count foolishness. First of all, the cross of Christ itself and the whole concept of a crucified Savior is something which the world is going to view as folly. This is the primary thing Paul has in mind in the context, I believe. In verse 18, the Apostle Paul says, "For the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God." In other words, he's talking about the idea of us needing a Savior, and this Savior is going to come in and not be some great military leader, and not be someone that the world would hail, but instead he would come into the world and he would be despised and rejected and crucified as the basest of human beings. That's God's answer to the world's problems. And people in the world just go look at that as folly. They sure did in the first century. Now in our day and time, I'll tell you what's happened, is that people have gotten used to the idea of Christianity and its emphasis upon a crucified Savior. And so the crucified Christ has lost in our current world a lot of its taint of foolishness, because people have gotten used to it. But there are still so many aspects of Christianity that people in the world today are just not going to regard as anything but just kind of ridiculous. How about the authority of Jesus Christ? You know, that's what Jesus declared to his apostles, Matthew 28, verse 18 and following. Jesus commissioned them, and he said, "All authority has been given unto me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations." And he taught them that I have all authority, and so when you baptize them in my name, you need to then begin to teach them all things that I've commanded you. And he said, "Lo, I'm with you until the end of the age." Here's one of those foolish things, quote, quote, about Christianity. It's demanding that we respect Jesus as the absolute authority of our lives. Not just that he was the Christ and resurrected and he's a king. Not just that in some kind of a itemized list of things. No, but that we really understand and accept the fact that he is the absolute authority in our lives. All authority belongs to him in heaven and on earth. I was talking with an individual several years ago about certain things regarding what Jesus taught, and even certain things about, say, the Lord's Supper every first day of the week. And I was talking with him about the fact that that was something that was so important to me that even when I would go out of town on the first day of the week, I'm going to worship the Lord, and just going on vacation didn't mean that I got a vacation from being a Christian, and I still felt a need, in fact, I still had a desire to worship the Lord on the first day of the week and partake of the Lord's Supper, even when I went out of town or on a vacation. And you know what the man's response was to me? He said, "Well, Marty, I believe in Jesus too, but let's not get fanatical about it." And he didn't mean that to be humorous. He was dead serious. In his mind, I was an extremist. I was taking this Christianity thing to the point where it was just affecting my life. In his mind, he absolutely thought he was helping me to see that I really got a little imbalanced over here. I'm taking this so seriously. I believe in Jesus too, he said. I'm a Christian too. I don't get fanatical about it. Folks, there are people in the world even people who claim to be Christians who really are this natural mindset, they don't get it. And it just really is something kind of foolish to them. Viewing the first century apostolic teaching as our standard, viewing us as needing to go back to what the apostles were teaching in the first century, that's something a lot of people in our society today, just even those who claim to be Christians, that just seems kind of foolish. You know, following the apostles in the first century seemed foolish to a lot of people then. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 10, the apostle Paul says, speaking of he and the other apostles, we are fools for Christ's sake. He goes on to say in verse 11, to this present hour we are both hungry and thirsty, we're poorly clothed and roughly treated, and are homeless. We toil working with our own hands. When we are reviled, we bless. And he goes on to talk about the fact that even there in the first century, the apostles of Jesus, they weren't lauded, they weren't hailed. No one praised them as, oh, St. Matthew and St. Peter and St. Paul. Paul goes on to say, we are the scum of the world. And think about what God was doing. The apostles of Jesus Christ, they're a bunch of Jewish men, people in the world, submitting to the authority of a handful of Jews? That's foolish. That's the way the world would view it. And they're uneducated men. They're not even religious leaders and great men of the Jewish nation. They're nobodies. They're Jewish fishermen and a tax collector. And other occupations of no esteem. And yet, we're supposed to submit as Roman citizens, as educated in the schools of philosophy. We're supposed to submit to what these Jewish apostles are saying. That's exactly what Christianity was saying. Absolutely. That's why Jesus said to his apostles, you're going to sit on 12 thrones judging the children of Israel. Well, we don't live in exactly that same society now, but you know what? The idea of submitting to what those apostles said 2,000 years ago, that's foolish. It's 2,000 years ago. We live right here and now, 21st century. You got to be kidding me. You're talking about restricting yourself to what they were teaching in the first century? That's why making a big deal about instrumental music not being used by first century Christians, it doesn't make sense to people in our world. Or if you try to emphasize, well, okay, now I realize that your denomination sprinkles an infant and calls that baptism, but that's not the baptism that the apostles were teaching in the first century. People in our world are going to look at you and go, so what? It's just water. What's the matter whether you dunk somebody down the water or you pour some water on their head? It's just water. They don't get it. And this idea of the authority of Jesus and authority expressed through his first century apostles, and we have to submit to what they were teaching then. Folks, people out there, most people are not going to get that. A few will. A few are going to be more of a spiritual mindset, and they're going to be persuaded by all this. But not a lot of people. Various doctrines, various moral teachings. 1 Peter chapter 4, the Apostle Peter talked about this to those early Christians scattered throughout Asia Minor. And he said in 1 Peter chapter 4, as he was urging them to make sure that they weren't unduly influenced by those of the world, he said in verses 3 and following, for the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lusts, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. You see what Peter's saying? He's saying that these are people who were your friends and your close associates before you became a Christian, and now that you have become a Christian, they look at you and your changed lifestyle. It doesn't make sense to them. You're not the same person. There are things that you used to do with us that you don't do with us anymore. And Paul says, or rather Peter says, they malign you for these things. Because you're not engaging in the things of sensuality and lust and drunkenness and those drinking parties. And you don't go to those places that you used to go to. And folks, a lot of people, they're just not going to get it. And you're going to say, well, I'm a Christian. And I'm trying to live morally right. And they're going to get upset with you because, well, you're saying I'm wrong then. And there's really no way you can avoid that, as nice as you are. Yeah, because what you're really saying is King Jesus is king of everybody, not just of those who happen to choose to accept him. And those people are not going to get it. And they're going to look at you and malign you and call you a traitor and ostracize you and all those kind of things. And you're not going to be one of them anymore. You're not going to be part of their group. Are you prepared for that? Am I prepared for that? There'll be a few people that will get it. A few. And those are people that you can influence for good and convert to Jesus Christ, hopefully. But most people, folks, are not going to get it. And we better make sure that we get it. I fear for a lot of people who claim to be Christians in our day, because they claim to be Christians and they're just as naturally minded as the people of the world. There's a lot of people who attend churches of Christ who are just as naturally minded, as unspiritually minded as people of the world. And they go to places and do things throughout the week that the world does, and then they come into a church building on Sunday and sing about how much that they love Jesus and blah, 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 and it's all just a sham. And they're really just as naturally minded as the people out there in the world. Is that some of us? Do we get it? Are we willing to accept the fact that the world's going to regard us as foolish? Are we willing to accept the fact that the things of God are foolish to a lot of people? And are we willing, along with the apostles, to be fools for the sake of Jesus Christ? I'm calling upon you this morning to have the courage. To have the courage to allow yourself to be called a fool. But to stand alongside your Savior, whom they also said was foolish. And you stand alongside of the apostles, whom they call foolish. And you stand alongside those in the first century who were willing to be ridiculed as fools. You stand alongside all of them. Let us stand alongside all of them. And willingly, if so be it, be fools for the sake of Jesus Christ. If there's someone this morning who needs to respond to the gospel, won't you come while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement?